This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures Friday off the Board of Trade were higher across the board. First off, your corn futures ended off of Friday's high, but they held on to fractional to 1.5 cent gains on Friday. For last week, December corn rallied just over 3%. December options expired on Friday, making March now the new front month. USDA's mandatory reporting system said 158,270 metric tons of corn was sold to Mexico. Private exporters also sold 131,000 metric tons to an unknown destination. Mainly, that turns out to be China. The USDA's National Ethanol Report noted that spot prices out of New Orleans were at $235 to $247 a ton and $265 a ton out of the Pacific Northwest for the week ending on Thursday the 20th. A South Korean feed group purchased 200,000 metric tons of international corn in a recent tender on Friday. And in the weekly report, they showed managed money for corn was at 278,889 contracts on the long side as of the 17th of last week. And that was a 1,946 contract reduction to 2 weeks ago's net long with some new sellers in play. The report showed commercials added 8,889 shorts and liquidated 703 longs, expanding net positions at 603,771 contracts on the short side. Moving on to your soybeans, front month bean futures closed their last trading day of the week up by 3.5 to 6.5. January beans were up by 2.8% above 2 weeks ago close. Soybean meal sessions were up by 20 cents to $1.10 after trading in the red at the midday point of Friday. December bean meal gained $6.60 last week. Soybean oil futures closed Friday 14 to 17 points weaker. Despite Friday giving back oil futures, they were the strongest of the soy complex for last week. December soybean oil rallied 4% from Friday to Friday. The weekly report from the CFTC showed soybean speculative traders reduced their net long by 12,320 contracts to 208,774. That came after long liquidation and new selling. Commercially, open interest rose by 1.2% on the week, reducing the net short by 3,650 contracts to 384,030. And soybean meal managed money dropped 7.5%, reducing net long by 6.3% to 74,210 contracts. Managed money expanded their net long into soybean oil to above 100,000 contracts for the first time in 8 weeks, to 103,778 contracts back on the 17th. Moving on to wheat, domestic wheat futures went into the weekend following mixed price action Friday. Chicago Board of Trade futures saw old crop wheat limited to 1.5 cent gains and new crop losses as much as 2.25. Hard red wheat closed the last trade day of last week by 1.5 to 2.5, and spring wheat futures in Minneapolis were 1.25 to 2.25 cents in the red at the close. Thursday's weekly trade report showed managed money had trimmed their net long positions by 18,219 contracts to 14,414 on the 17th by the way of long liquidation. For Kansas City wheat, managed money's closing positions were a near wash as the net long grew just 638 contracts to 47,697. Spring wheat speculative traders were at 6,061 contracts net long as of the 17th. Japan purchased 101,854 metric tons of wheat from the U.S. and Canada, with the U.S. selling the majority of that sale. So going back over and recapping your close of grain futures Friday from the Board of Trade Chicago. Corn for December up 0.75 cents on Friday, 4.23 1/4. March corn up a penny, 4.28 1/4. May corn up 1.5, 4.30 3/4. Soybeans January from Friday gained 3.5 at 11.81. March beans up 5 3/4, 11.81 1/4. May beans up 6.5, 11.79 1/2. Wheat, Chicago for December on Friday up 1.5, 5.93 1/4. May wheat up 0.75 cents, 5.99 1/2. May wheat stayed steady and stayed at 6.02 1/4. Oats, December up 0.5 cents, 2.97 3/4. March oats steady, 3.12. May oats up 0.5 cents, 3.15 1/2. Bean meal on Friday for December up $1, 3.94.70 a ton. January bean meal up 20 cents, 3.92.50 a ton. And soybean oil, the lone down spot on Friday, December bean oil down 15, 38.66. January bean oil down 17, 38.34. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Monday's Cash Grain Reports.
This is Friday's reported grain price and trend prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois cut grain prices are mostly higher on Friday afternoon on South American weather concerns. In northern West Illinois, cut grain dealers quoted shell corn bids steady to 3 cents higher at 395 to 418. Soybean bids are mostly 3 to 4 cents higher at 1131 to 1165. In central Illinois, cut grain dealers quoted shell corn bids steady at 403 to 424, while soybean bids are 3 to 8 cents higher at 1143 to 1191. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were steadied up 2 cents at 390 to 445. Soybean bids were 3 to 7 higher at 1129 to 1192. Illinois soybean processor case soybean bids are up 4 to 6 cents at 1181 to 1192. Basis was steady to up 3 at option to 15 over the January. High pro soybean meal on a truck base offered at 396.70 to 404.70 a ton, up $1 a ton with basis unchanged at 2 over to 10 over the December. Illinois corn processor case corn bids were up a penny at 418 to 445. With basis unchanged at 522 over the December. Illinois River barge loading elevators coated dip produced the corn bids a penny higher at 417 to 428 with basis steady at 600 to 5 over the December. Soybeans ended up 4 to 9 cents at 1167 to 1176 with basis unchanged to up 5 at 14 under to 5 under the January. East St. Louis barge loading tomato placer produced the corn bids mixed 447 to 450. Their soybean prices were steady to 6 cents higher at $11.96 to $12. So if we closed up a penny at $6.02 to $6.03, Milo ended the day steady at $4.83 to $4.98. Contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at $3.96 to $4.26, soybeans at $11.31 to $11.68. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at $4.11 to $4.31, soybeans at $11.58 to $11.91. In the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 416 to 455, soybeans at 1165 to 1205. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on now to your livestock futures report on this Monday morning from last Friday's close. Live cattle were mostly higher, feeder cattle lowered across the board, and hogs were higher across the board with some triple-digit gains in the February contract. First off, taking a look at cattle. After touching triple-digit losses earlier in the session Friday, live cattle futures recovered and closed mostly higher on Friday. December stayed 15 cents in the red at the closing bell, but the other front months were 2 to 25 cents in the black. Feeder cattle futures closed 27 to 97 cents lower. The Wednesday feeder cattle index was up by 137.51, up 13 cents. USDA confirmed cash sales for last week were $105 to $111, with most sales taking place at $110. Northern dress deals were at $170 to $172, mostly near the $172 mark. Wholesale box beef prices were reported higher in the afternoon update Friday. Choice was at $238.35 a hundredweight, up by 65 cents. Selects were $1.09 higher, $214.98 a hundredweight. USDA reported 11.973 million head of cattle were on feed in November. That was the largest November inventory on record. October marketings were posted at 1.873 million head, slightly below last year. Just 2.192 head were placed in October, which marked the third lowest record for the month. Trade was expecting a 9% drop year-over-year instead of the actual 11. CFTC data showed a third consecutive week of cattle spec short coverings. On Tuesday, the 17th, cattle spec traders were at 37,937 contracts long. That's up 9,947 week-over-week. In feeders, managed money covered 1,436 shorts, but remained at 812 contracts short. USDA estimates last week's federally inspected cattle slaughter at 665,000 head through Saturday. That's down 3,000 head from last year, but up from 653,000 from last week. That's a gain of roughly 12,000 head week over week. Moving on to your hog futures, they closed Friday with $1.55 to $2.30 gains in the front months. December closed the day 42 cents higher, but stayed 77 cents lower all last week. Pork cutout figures were $1.05, the 205 higher in the front months. The lean hog index for Wednesday was another 55 cents lower at 68.77. The USDA's national average base hog price for Friday afternoon was down 33 cents at 58.73. USDA's national pork carcass cutout value was $1.05 weaker Friday afternoon, led by a $6.32 drop in butts and a $4.16 drop in hams. The weekly commitment of traders report showed that managed money had covered 1,558 shorts on the week ending on Tuesday. That increased the group's net long by 1,775 contracts to 35,710. USDA's estimate for the weekly federally inspected hog slaughter was at 2.711 million head through Saturday. That's up roughly 28,000 head week over week, but down from 2.767 from last year, roughly a difference of 51,000 head. Year-to-date hog slaughter remains 0.75% ahead of last year's pace. So going back over and recapping your livestock futures from close of trade Friday off the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle for December were 15 cents lower at 108.10, February live cattle 12 cents higher, 110.65, April live cattle up 25 cents, 114.45. Feeder cattle lower across the board, with January leading the way down 95 cents at 134.60. March feeders down 57 cents, 134.37. April feeders down 40 cents, 136.17. Lean hogs December gained 42 cents, 64.12. February lean hogs up 230, 65.35. April lean hogs up $2, 68.22. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Friday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Friday afternoon livestock report. Started in National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations are 200-pound pork carcass traded 33 cents higher. In a range of 50 to 59.75 with a weighted average carcass price of 58.73. From the Illinois Direct Sow Port, slaughter sow price were steady with good demand for heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded $32 to $36, 4 to 5 weighted $35 to $39, 5 to 6 weighted $38 to $42, and over 600 pounds $41 to $45. On the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts country buying points were steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $34 to $42. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts have totaled $29,758. In the direct cattle trade, in the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers live basis trade at 105 to 109, and on address basis at 170 to 172. Choice heifers and live basis trade at 106 to 108, and on address basis at 170 to 172. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts with stags with 355 loads traded. Calculations are 200-pound pork carcass was 79.22, which is $1.54 higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice and select beef carcasses are trading higher. Choice carcasses are $238.35, which is 65 cents higher, while select carcasses are $214.98, which is $1.09 higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 115,000 compared to 118,000 last week and 116,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated 485,000 compared to 477,000 last week and 488,000 one year ago. That includes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show on this Monday morning, brought to you by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield, by Farm Credit Illinois, and by Pros Drainage. Part two of the Morning Ag Show brought to you this morning by the CNB Bank and Trust, with 17 locations to serve you, and by Stein Seed. And once again, we joined WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now here in Ag News on your Monday morning. Agriculture is better prepared to deal with the second wave of COVID now rolling across the nation, though an American Farm Bureau official says there are still unknowns. Andrew Walmsley says there are still big challenges ahead of us as consumer buying habits and supply chains shift once more amid the rising infections and renewed school and business closings. But Walmsley says after months of safety measures and tens of billions of dollars in virus aid, producers and processors are better prepared for the next wave of COVID.
We think and hope we're prepared from the lessons learned earlier this year, through the supply chain, to be better positioned to react. all that's obviously an unknown, and having you know, the assistance that's needed to keep folks fed and store shelves stocked, we hope Congress will be partners with us.
And that's another unknown, with stimulus talks stalled, maybe till a new Congress is seated, and with many producers' needs, including livestock and biofuels, still unmet. Meantime, Walmsley says farmers have done what they always do, adapt.
We've learned a lot. We've adapted over the last, what it was, 7 or 8 months. And farmers are making, you know, those decisions in this new world when they didn't have that opportunity before. I mean, our farmers have still been farming. I mean, we're still out there producing, working hard every day. It's, you know, I would once again point to the broader supply chain challenges that I think we've adapted to, and working with our partners in the supply chain to be better prepared.
Better prepared as consumption again moves back towards supermarkets from restaurants, and producers once again face possible processing slowdowns. Plants and workers are also more ready to fight the virus. And on the topic of meat processing, details are coming out about a wrongful death lawsuit against Tyson Foods and its Waterloo, Iowa processing plant. The suit alleges that during the initial stages of COVID-19 back in the spring, the company ordered employees to report to work while supervisors privately wagered money on the number of workers who would be sickened by the virus. The Iowa Capital Dispatch says the lawsuit alleges that Tyson Foods is guilty of a willful disregard for workplace safety. In a written statement last week, Tyson says it was saddened by the loss of any Tyson team member and sympathizes with their families. The company won't comment on the specific aspects of the suit, but did say top priority is the health and safety of its workers, and they've implemented a host of protective measures at Waterloo and other facilities that meet or exceed CDC and OSHA guidelines for preventing COVID-19. At least 5 Waterloo, Iowa plant employees have died from COVID-19. According to the local county health department there, over 1,000 workers at the plant, or more than one-third of the total workforce, contracted the virus. And with the new surge of COVID-19 across the country, U.S. ethanol production has been a big source of demand for domestic corn. However, right now, COVID has sharply curbed global fuel consumption. In recent weeks, Reuters says output has chipped away at its deficit versus prior years. However, the resurgence of COVID-19 and increasing restrictions, especially just before the holiday season, are threatening to halt a comeback in fuel demand just before it can ramp up again. The U.S. Energy Information Administration says fuel ethanol output for the week ending November 13th totaled 962,000 barrels a day. That's down 1.5% from the previous week, which had the highest production level since the week ending March 20th. The last 3 weeks have been the most productive for American ethanol makers since March. The EIA says seasonal trends are part of the reason why the output is rising. However, when compared to previous year's production levels, it shows that output is rising out of its COVID slump, though the pace is slow. The 4-week output rose to 960,000 barrels a day through last Friday, down just over 8% compared to the same period in the previous 3 years. USDA says corn used for ethanol will be 5.05 billion bushels. That's up 4% on the year, but down 7.75% from the 3-year average. And with Thanksgiving already upon us on Thursday, every dollar Americans spent on Thanksgiving dinner this year, farmers and ranchers only earn 12 cents. The National Farmers Union says that marks slightly from a drop of last year when farmers claimed 12.5 cents on the Thanksgiving food dollar. Though farmers' smaller share of the food expenditure could be blamed on dropping commodity prices in previous years, that's not the case this year. After bottoming out during the pandemic, prices for many ag products have mostly recovered. NFU says the shift can be attributed to higher grocery bills. In the last year, the food price has risen almost 4%, far ahead of the 1.5% rate of overall inflation. The higher food prices are coming at a bad time for American families who are experiencing higher unemployment rates and food insecurity due to COVID-19. Even though the consumers are paying 4% more for their food, almost none of their increasing dollars are being passed on to the farmer and rancher. Instead, the NFU says it's being captured by the processor, packer, distributor, and retailer in between the farm and the table. For example, beef prices are 10% higher than last year, but ranchers are getting essentially the same amount for their animals that they did 1 year ago. And on the topic of livestock, the USDA is reminding dairy producers that the deadline to enroll in the Dairy Margin Coverage Program for calendar year 2021 is quickly approaching, coming up on Friday, December 11th. The USDA's Farm Service Agency opened up the DMC sign-up back in October to help producers manage economic risk brought on by milk price and feed cost disparity. 2020 has been a very challenging year for ag producers, and we don't yet know what next year will bring, according to FSA Administrator Richard Fordyce. He went on to say dairy producers should definitely consider coverage for 2021, as even the slightest drop in the margin can trigger a payment. The DMC program, first created by the 2018 Farm Bill, offers reasonably priced protection to dairy producers when the difference between the all milk price and the feed average cost or the margin falls below a specific dollar amount selected by a producer. To enroll, producers must certify with the FSA that the operation is commercially marketing milk, sign all the required forms, and pay the $100 administrative fee unless the farm qualifies for a waiver. Producers can select the $4 catastrophic level of coverage with no premium fee. They can also choose to buy up coverage where the premium is based on margin triggers between $4.50 and $9.50 on 5 to 95% of their established production history. Moving on now to our feature story on this Monday morning, rural America has experienced yet another difficult year, making a strong farm safety net essential to protecting America's food, fuel, and fiber supply. Crop insurance is the cornerstone of this safety net and provides a reliable risk management tool to America's farmers. Tom Zacharias is president of National Crop Insurance Services.
America's farmers and ranchers have experienced extreme weather and market uncertainties this year, as well as dealing with the effects of the pandemic. Throughout the year, crop insurance has been there to help farmers endure these hardships and help them manage their risk. Our industry is thankful to be a trusted partner with the farm community, and we're proud to help them protect more than 90% of planted acres in the U.S.
Crop insurance provides aid for producers as they navigate the everyday challenges that come with farming. This year, the COVID-19 pandemic introduced new risks and uncertainties.
America's farmers and ranchers never stop their essential work of feeding America. That's why crop insurance companies, their agents and adjusters, and our partners at USDA and the Risk Management Agency have continually worked to support the farm community. It has been our priority to maintain our record of service to the American farmer during these difficult times.
Zacharias emphasized that the unique private-public relationship that is the foundation of crop insurance has allowed the industry to pivot quickly to face new challenges.
Crop insurance utilizes private sector efficiencies and innovation to quickly deliver to the farm community. That's why crop insurance is agriculture's most effective risk management tool. The industry and the Risk Management Agency have also worked this year to strengthen crop insurance and expand the insurance options available to farmers. No matter what you farm or where you farm, crop insurance can help protect your operation.
This year demonstrated once again the incredible value of crop insurance and underscored the need for Congress to protect a strong crop insurance system.
It would be an understatement to say that farmers face an unpredictable future. But fortunately, crop insurance is a predictable risk management tool, and our industry has a demonstrated record of success. That's why farmers continue to invest in crop insurance, purchasing over 1 million crop insurance policies in 2020. Going forward, it is essential that crop insurance remains affordable, widely available, and economically viable.
Finally, Zacharias noted the resilience of rural America during this tough year. America's farmers and ranchers have continued to work hard to produce the world's safest and most affordable food supply and fiber supply.
No doubt, new uncertainties lie ahead, but we are all stronger together. America's farmers and ranchers can rest easier knowing that their local crop insurance agents, adjusters, and the crop insurance companies stand ready to provide a helping hand when it is needed.
Again, that was National Crop Insurance Services President Tom Zacharias. Moving on now to State of Illinois Ag News for your Monday morning. Progress has been made on two COVID vaccines, one from Moderna and the other from Pfizer. The key question will be distribution, specifically to rural underserved areas of Illinois, including many here in our listing area. Governor Pritzker was asked about serving the rural underserved areas.
We are not leaving any part of the state out. I mean, I am very focused on equity. That is vitally important to me, and that means equity for rural families, for people who live in communities that have been left out and left behind with regard to health care, and equity to making sure that we're getting first to those who are most vulnerable. So we're that plan, you can take a look at what we did for the federal government, although I have to say they asked us so early in the process that when you don't know what the vaccines are that you're delivering and you don't know whether you have to keep them in cold storage or whether they're room temperature, it's very hard to put a plan together that meets every requirement of every type of vaccine. And by the way, there's likely to be more than one vaccine that is distributed, and that means there will be more than one supply chain. But we're, trust me, focused on rural Illinois.
Pfizer is reporting its coronavirus vaccine is more successful than originally thought. An earlier evaluation reported the vaccine to be more than 90% effective. However, a final analysis shows it to be 95% effective. The company earlier on last week said it was seeking emergency use authorization from the FDA within days. In other state news related to the pandemic, Illinois Farm Bureau President Rich Giebert is pleased with Illinois farmers' response to the ongoing pandemic.
Well, I think our members really, while different times were passed, frustrated, highly stressed, and particularly those in the livestock side of agriculture, we were really worried right on the onset, would we be classified as essential, that we could put a crop in the ground and get the inputs that we need to put a crop in the ground to continue providing goods and services to the consumer, getting livestock to the harvesting facilities, et cetera, although that was really challenging for a 3 or 4 week period. But you know what? As you mentioned, we're used to dealing with curveballs, you might say, and our members, for the most part, did an excellent job, and you just take it in stride. You kind of take a deep breath and plow forward. You know, I look back at the statue that's out here in front lawn of the IA grounds, that's there of Paul, Mr. Schumann. You know, to plow a straight furrow, you have to look forward and look ahead, and our members continue to do that. Sometimes we glance off to the side, but we always are looking ahead and how to make things better for not only our farms but our families, and to do the best and provide the goods and services to the consumer that we do a very, very good job at.
And one more casualty due to the pandemic, the Illinois Farm Bureau's annual meeting, held usually the first week of December at the Palmer House in Chicago, is a virtual event. And meteorological winter is set to begin next week on December 1st, and we have an early winter outlook from DTN Chief Ag Meteorologist Bryce Anderson on what winter has in store for us.
Early December is shaping up to be very similar to the latter part of November in terms of the fairly mild temperatures and the lack of real strong storm energy moving across the Midwest. As we go through December, there is going to be the higher potential for some more stormy developments, but at least to start things out, it's looking pretty favorable as we get ready for the month of December. Our greatest potential for moderate to heavy snow or some strong winter storms actually during the last half of the winter, from the mid part of January then into February. With the way things are shaping up.
And the technical first day of winter is December 21st. And that concludes your Ag News here on a Monday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So again, for this Monday morning, November 23rd, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.